Welcome to We Are Libertarians. This is a special on-location event. We are at IU's campus, which is a college, Indiana University, in Bloomington, Indiana. And we are speaking at a legalization rally. Did you... 2003, Spangle never could imagine himself speaking to a legalization rally. How about yourself?
As someone who owned a one-hitter as a senior and then sold it 2 weeks later for $5, I'd have said no.
And our table, we have a table here, which I didn't know, which I'm glad we do, but I would have brought something. Our table...
We just assume people know who we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather presumptuous.
Our table is next to the Students for a Democratic Society, which is a famous leftist group. And Greg, upon finding that out, immediately walked over to them and asked if all white lives matter.
Well, yeah, and then hands up, don't shoot.
Right. And you couldn't have seen a more horrified expression if you tried.
She was one of those gender Nazis. I could tell it. I could see it in her eyes. And I just looking at her assumed her gender, and she was probably pissed. These are my people.
Yeah. So we're on a college campus, a very liberal college campus, one that your dad taught at, actually.
He did for 39 years. He was a professor of strategy at the Kelly School of Business.
Oh, okay. The more conservative wing.
Yeah.
So, and walking up to join the podcast here is Rupert. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Well, you just yelled into the microphone, so my ears hurt.
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Never apologize.
We'll talk quieter. Yeah.
So, you've probably spoken at legalization rallies before, haven't you?
You know, I think we might have avoided the legalization rallies when I was on the campaign trail. I might have spoke of different things to talk about with, you know, the legalization, decriminalization, the detention center that 40% plus are in there on pot charges. Right. I mean, it's crazy. But this will be one of the official real first times that I'm actually just at a legalization rally.
Yeah. So I don't think I've ever been to one. And it is funny because when I became executive director in 2008, pot was something that was, and it still is, used to smear libertarian candidates. So we actively avoided it. And it wasn't until 2012 with Rupert's campaign that we actually started to open up about talking about it and embracing the issue, because from 2008 to 2012, things really changed.
Yeah, it's been an interesting process to watch how it's gone to taboo, to decriminalization and the economic perspective of it, to now 52% of Americans, according to Gallup, support the legalization of marijuana, as they always should have, considering, as Rupert mentioned at the Liberty Tour event, our founding document was written on hemp paper.
Right.
You know, if they would release just the information that they have back from World War I, World War II, when every engine in World War II, every engine was switched over from diesel to hemp ethanol. Every soldier was clothed in hemp clothing. Every document written on hemp paper. Do you know how much of that hemp came from Indiana?
Everybody was so high.
Oh, well, you know, oh my gosh. I have to say that, that there's a reason they call it ditchweed or rope dope. It's not the best thing to smoke, but, you know, the police still, in many different counties, know where the wild pot, the ditchweed, the rope dope is growing, wait for the kids to harvest it, and arrest them for it, just like it's, you know, I mean, my gosh, heroin. They're classing it the same classification as heroin. It's just a plant, but it is a plant that could bring industry back to Indiana. Every one of us knows about factories that are shuttered, that are closed down, that are just creating more of an eyesore than anything, creating a drain on our society. How about we start putting those factories back into society, back to work with our workers, creating right here in Bloomington, the home of limestone. Start grinding up, taking all the extra, all the scab limestone, grinding it up, mixing it with the hemp that we grow in Indiana, putting a few other chemicals, creating hempcrete that would beat any concrete out there on the market right now.
Really?
We could create it right here in Bloomington.
That's something that's a tested and viable alternative?
They are now starting to create the hemp block that they're guaranteeing that can last through any weather. Hemp block. You could sit it underwater for a year and it'd still be a solid hemp block.
Yeah, and the reason that it was actually outlawed is in the 1930s, William Randolph Hearst owned a lot of rope interests, and I don't know what rope is made out of, but it was a competitor.
Yarn?
Yeah, the cotton and something.
It always goes back to slavery.
Yeah. So William Randolph Hearst had a competing interest. So hemp, because it was so cheap and you can have three harvests a year, it was different than his paper mills and his trees that he had vested interest in. And so he started a push to outlaw pot, outlaw hemp, and he succeeded all across the nation because he was a powerful interest.
And John Rockefeller with Standard Oil. I mean, you're talking about it was an alternative for biofuel, if you will, and they wanted to make sure there was absolutely no chance such a competitor was allowed.
Yeah. So we're going to bring you several different segments throughout this episode, talk to a few different people. You'll hear our speech. You'll hear Rupert's speech. All around the legalization of marijuana and really drug legalization across the board, which we wholly endorse, proudly endorse.
Absolutely. It's time for people to stop apologizing for legalization. It's an economic waste. It's a societal cancer, and there's no way of supporting it and being anything but ignorant.
You know, when you run a war on drugs that actually helps the other side, it's created drug cartels that are so strong and so powerful now that they feel they can fight our government. There's a time we need to stop, step back and say, we made some wrong choices. We're going to change what we do. Stop filling our prisons with a bunch of little drug addicts and start putting these guys back to work. Stop lining the pockets of these drug cartels and take their power away.
All right, so enjoy this episode of We Are Libertarians. All right, we are here with what's your title? So first of all, what's your names?
I'm Dakota Hotchkiss.
Okay. I am Constantine Opel, the managing editor of the Hoosier Flipside.
Oh, wait, are we doing our names?
Yes.
Oh, I'm Voidius Black, and I'm the graphic designer.
Okay. So they are the editors of the Hoosier Flipside, which is a satirical, would you say a satirical magazine? How would you describe it?
We're like a satirical comedy newspaper.
So similar to The Onion.
Yes.
All right. So how often do you guys come out?
We publish usually two articles a week on our website and on Facebook, and we print usually once a month.
All right. And we have a late entry to the podcast. What's your name?
My name is Mitchell Trachtenberg.
All right. And you have what's your pen name?
My pen name is Bismo Falcor.
All right. Bismo Falcor.
He's the editor-in-chief.
Okay, you're the editor-in-chief. So we are old. He's 30?
31.
31. I'm 33. And it's been a long time since we were in college. And I work around the comedy community, and the vibe is that comedians don't want to go work on college campuses anymore because kids your age have no sense of humor. You people. So what are you finding about the senses of humor on a college campus?
Honestly, we've really pushed the envelope quite a few times. We do have a motto here: afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. So we try never to punch down. I know that if we were to do that, then people would get really upset. But really, the only major backlash we've gotten was actually from the Greek system when we criticized some of their policies. But honestly, such as, okay, well, when Alpha Tau Omega got kicked off campus for forcing one of their pledges to perform acts on a stripper, we wrote Alpha Tau Omega hosts philanthropy event to help struggling women pay for college.
Fantastic.
And, oh my gosh, actually, Chris...
Gosh, yeah, I posted that article to, like, the Indiana University class of 2020, and someone commented, like, why would you write this? You're a loser, Kristen Pimley, and, like, 41 people liked it. I'm like, well, I will gladly be dragged through the mud for something I believe in. So it can be interesting navigating the minefield that is PC culture, but we have the belief that nothing is sacred, and you can write about anything as long as you're coming with good intentions.
But they're the establishment. That is, like, those are the Greeks. They deserve to be mocked.
As a Greek, I say that.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I've actually been pleasantly surprised. I have a certain amount of anxiety before posting anything, I have to admit. Because I don't...
I get that vibe about you, Mitchell. You just seem like an anxious young man. I don't know what it is. If I were to describe him, he looks like a hostage on an Iranian crisis. If they took a plane, he would be the first one.
I told you his beard was ginger. I told you.
So
it is very true that he looks like a hostage most of the time.
He looks like Daniel Pearl's young cousin.
On and it's badass.
Yeah, he has a Bowser hat, yeah.
I'm really sorry, I'm getting kind of triggered right now.
Well, you won't have a safe space from us. He walked up to the socialist that have the table next to us and said, oh, yeah, all white lives matter. I love you guys. And you should have seen the girl in the short shorts, should have seen Blue Hair's face.
Okay, we've already slut-shamed me today. Let's not slut-shame anyone else.
Yeah, your buddy here called you a slut, like, right away. As soon as I walked up, I was like, these are our people. I can tell.
Calling her a slut would be afraid that she couldn't actually handle it. And that would be... That'd be sexist.
It's your vagina. You do with it what you want.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the business school, so I prostitute myself to corporations every day.
That's exactly right.
What's your major?
International Business and Marketing.
Nice. Do you know Don Krakow?
I don't. Oh, I might have met him once, but yeah, I'm in the honors program, so I'm slowly turning into a sociopath.
That's good. Yeah, you have dead eyes.
I do.
Yeah, so, the eyes of a shark. I can't even see yours because of the transition lenses.
That's right. I'm cool.
Now, you're a graphic designer. Do you do dank memes?
I make many dank memes.
So, we have found that memes really have become the pamphlets of our generation. You know, you had the pamphlets in the 1700s. Now it's dank memes.
Absolutely. Dank memes are revolutionizing the future. It's a way for people to represent themselves in a safe space where everyone... I say safe space loosely because, you know, a lot of people get triggered. But if you're actually a dank memer, you're not going to get triggered by anything. Like, you can literally post anything.
Inspiration.
Basically, what Greg does, his claim to fame on Facebook is taking inspirational quotes that your basic bitch friends like to post. And he takes the text and puts them over photos of Hitler.
Be the change
and,
world.
Yeah.
I love Foxpirations where they take, like, a beautiful landscape and they'll just put over, like, Bush to 9/11.
Yeah.
That's true, though. Yeah, what are the lines that, like, really sappy lines, and then they put them over, like, screenshots from gay porn or something?
Yeah, the Pornhub comments that are memes.
Yeah, those are great. So, actually, do you guys know that Snapchat filter where it changes your faces?
Yeah.
Oh. I took a picture of Hitler, and I was doing this, and Hitler was on my face.
What were you just doing, by the way?
This is radio.
Zeke Hale. <All right. laughs> yes, you can't really see what I'm doing. Just imagine I'm doing a Nazi salute with my leg up.
Now, I'm just going to say, you're tall and blonde. Are you getting nervous, Mitchell? Tell us about your dankest meme.
Ooh. Okay, so I'm actually a game design major, nice. And a lot of my memes are centered around the game design program, so... I usually like to Photoshop my professor's faces onto things. My most recent one was the Michelangelo's, like, David touching. Was it Michelangelo?
Michelangelo.
Michelangelo is the artist of the Renaissance. Maya Angelou said why the caged bird sing.
It was the painting in the Sistine Chapel where David... Yes.
Not Oprah's friend. Yeah.
Da Vinci Code Michelangelo.
God is touching Adam's hand. I put all the professors on, like, the angels' faces, and, like, I made God, like, the head of the program, and on the left were all the students. I think it was the best meme I've ever made in my life.
So our, like, I was arguing with somebody, a former IU student who just graduated recently, and I said, this safe space stuff and, like, this all seems overblown, and that doesn't seem like it's most campuses. The people that just wouldn't let the white kids cross the bridge, like all the minority student groups block the bridge. Like, does that kind of stuff happen all the time here? I mean, is everybody that offended all the time here on campus?
I particularly, in certain circles, that's definitely the case. Indiana's kind of weird. We have the Collins Living Learning Center, which is Social Justice HQ, and that's sort of the exact stereotypical PC culture. Yeah, the burn bros, yeah. Actually, someone spray-painted college's capitalism on there. Somebody wrote in the overheard around Collins Facebook page, Cologne is, like, literally retarded. Pardon my language. And this...
Did you just apologize for saying retarded? He's compromised his art.
I'd like to finish it. Yeah. So basically, someone wrote, Cologne is, like, literally retarded. And this page, which has been around for 4 years, became destroyed because the freedom fighters, who were the libertarians there, raised their arms against the social justice warriors. and the war just, the trolls and the warriors, and the page was taken down because of a five-word statement, cologne is like literally retarded. I think that's five words, that's five
That's
words.
Retarded.
Meaning the city or like the smelly stuff?
I don't think they were talking about the city. Although it might be.
Yeah,
it's French.
Smells. Okay. Well, very good, so...
PC culture at its core isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's brought up some really good issues, but the way it's been executed has been so poor, it completely undermines the good parts of the movement.
It becomes satirical in and of itself.
It's very easy to make fun of.
So what are things that you think are good parts of the PC culture?
I think just a conscious awareness of being a better person and treating people equally. There's, of course, many people that take it too far. But being just a collective mind that everyone should be equal and maybe you should take care to not go out of the way to bring other people down or offend people. I think that in itself is actually a really good value, just the way it's been executed. Like, a safe space within itself, it's kind of a stupid idea. But it's not like an inherently stupid idea because there are good uses for safe spaces, but people have taken and latched onto it and taken it way too far.
I agree, but you've just triggered Greg.
But I get what you mean, because for me the point is when it alters behavior is when it's gone too far. So if you're going to say something because you think someone can't handle it, that is the point where you should you should just stop and get out of your own head. But when you're consciously going around walking on eggshells, it creates a society that can't handle anything and everything's a boycott or a protest.
Though when I hear safe spaces, I can't help but think about like the xenophobia that's come from like Donald Trump. Who wants a bigger safe space than Donald Trump? It just happens to be that his safe space doesn't have Muslims or Mexicans in it. But that's what this wall is. So it's on both sides of the political spectrum.
All right, so the flip side got its start how?
Okay, I got this. So the flip side actually started at my high school, Deerfield High School in the northern suburbs, after a graphic design project went awry.
Of Chicago.
It was then taken from year to year. Different people ran the flip side at my high school. Then people started taking it to college with them. So there's the Stanford flip side. There was a Mizzou flip side, a Miami flip side, a USC, Northwestern Med School. Somehow Edinburgh found us across...
In Scotland,
yes. Literally. And so I started the Hoosier flip side. For the first 7 months, I was a bumbling buffoon, had trouble organizing it. And then I found Kristen over here. And then Constantinople. And after 2 weeks, we had our first issue out. We were actually assisted by the founder of the Stanford Flipside in publishing and getting the funds to be able to print. His name is Jeremy Keeshan.
He was recently named like one of LinkedIn's top 30 under 30.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, are you serious? I didn't know that. Wow. Yeah, that's the Stanford Flipside for you. And I think we had 300 Facebook likes over the first 2 years, and I think we had like 200 over the past 2 months.
Yeah, we've passed 500 recently. We never thought that our bullshitting would take us this far, but we're here.
Tell us about it. You see, you always have to find a business student to like help the bumbling buffoon get your shit straight, and a guy that makes memes. So, all right, you need memes, a business-minded person, and an idiot.
To offend people.
Yeah.
All right, very good. So this is self-promotion time. One chance to self-promote yourself and what you guys are doing.
I make memes. That's about it.
Well, where can people find said memes?
They'll find them on the Hoosier Flipside page.
4chan?
Don't go on there.
You don't go on the 4chan?
I stopped.
Why?
Are you triggering me?
you did a Hitler salute at Hillel University in the Midwest. You might as well just own it, man.
Are you asking me about like my actual self? Like,
well, just whatever. People can find you, it's fine. We're busting your balls. We just want to give you the opportunity to give yourself a shout out where people can find what you're doing.
I'm going to start posting some memes to my Twitter. That's at Bowser Night. It's like Bowser and then NIGHT, like nighttime. So follow me if you want to. I'm going to start the meme game strong. So
yeah. All right. And my name is Mitchell Trachtenberg. My pen name is Bismo Falcor. You can find all my material on the Hoosier Flipside. I don't write much on my own, but I always have a role in every article that gets put out. So yeah, just check some of that out. being the editor-in-chief, everything sort of goes through me a little bit. And I'll be performing at Bears a week from Monday on 3rd Street, so check it out. I'm going to be dabbling a little bit. I did a little bit in Chicago, dabbling. Well, I could dab as well. I just dabbed, for those of you who don't see me. But.
Are we cologne?
Am I wearing too much cologne? These two have, like, moved. They're at Purdue at this point. My arm can't reach that far. All right, yourself?
Our motto is Free Everywhere, 230 Purdue.
All right.
My name is Kristen Pinley. My pen name is Constance Sinopel. And you can find all of our content at HoosierFlipside.com. That's H-O-O-S-I-R, Flipside.com. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Very cool.
Very good. You can tell she's the business person.
I know how to plug. Come on.
And I'm me.
What are your plans after graduation?
My last resort, I want to teach English in South Korea. Maybe pursue acting. We'll see.
I'm actually an international studies major, and I guess you could say satire is kind of my coping mechanism with the depressing nature of everything nowadays. Yay! But I'm thinking maybe law school, maybe something boring, but I always want flip side. So I want comedy writing to be a part of my life wherever I go.
So I'm actually a senior, so it's coming up really close, but since I'm a game design major, after I graduate, I'm just going to submit like 100 resumes to everywhere around the country to get my name anywhere. So
Bowser Knight on every resume.
Yeah, my name, but go to Hotchkiss on every resume, anywhere I can get a job, I will sign up for it.
All right, well, get rid of that Hitler snap then. All right, thanks guys so much, Hoosier Flipside, and good luck to all three of you. All right, we are here with the IU Libertarian Party Group. I know Tyler. First, let's go down the line, actually. Tell us your names and tell us who you're with.
Okay, so my name's Dylan. I'm the president, and this is our first time tabling, so it's pretty awesome. I'm excited.
I'm Tyler. I'm the marketing director.
I'm Andrew. I'm the VP.
All right, cool. So you guys are the Libertarian Party Group on campus, correct?
Yep, the official one affiliated with the party.
Now, in my 10 years with the Libertarian Party, I can't really think of a time where there was a college libertarian group on campus. It's always been YAL or SFL. So why did you guys decide to start a libertarian party group?
I tried to join one, and there wasn't one that was directly affiliated with the party. And YAL's great, but they can't do actual like activism in the same way that we're going to be able to. Like here, you can see we have the signs out for Gary Johnson, and YAL wouldn't be able to do that.
Especially during the election season, especially with these two candidates, I think Gary Johnson, he's the first libertarian to actually like have his name out there and people actually hear about him and they see him on the news. And so I think it's a perfect time that we started a libertarian party.
Yeah, basically we want to take this election in which libertarians have gained so much interest, so much support, and turn that into a constructive infrastructure to elevate libertarian candidates in this area.
So what kind of reception are you guys finding?
It's been really good. Both the other political parties, the Republicans and Democrats, have actually been very amiable to us. And we've gotten a pretty good amount of interest in the short time. We're not even university accredited yet, and we've already got a base of over 30 people.
What's required for that?
A huge amount of paperwork. You have to draft a constitution, and it has to be exactly to the T how they want it. I'm on the last few steps of that process right now. So
how many Masons have to sign the constitution?
At least 13.
Have you ever thought about saying fuck the state?
Yes, every day.
Yeah. So you go through the process, and then what are some of the activities that you guys will do as a college organization?
What?
What kind of activities are you guys planning?
Sure. So the Republicans and Democrats are supposed to have a debate with each other, and we're a new organization, so we didn't get in on that in time. But they actually canceled it, and they have some bad blood. So we're going to try to fill that gap and come in and make like a three-way debate.
That means they're both going to want to kill you.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, like right now, they both like us better than they like each other. Yeah. So it's like we're sneaking in. So it's good. But stuff like that, we want to do free speech events. We just got approached by somebody from the Green Party talking about doing ranked preference voting versus just one or the other.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a really cool thing to back as well.
Yep. Basically, we want to do constructive stuff, support libertarian candidates, build the libertarian base in this area, so we can turn that into a political force for freedom.
So what are some of the issues that your fellow students care about the most?
I think here we are at the legalization rally. I think that's a big one. Another big one on college campuses everywhere right now is free speech. And whether or not universities are stepping in to limit free speech or not, and we want to stand here to make sure that IU never institutes anything like that. And a lot of students care about that. I think there's a lot of students here especially that are libertarians that don't know it.
Police brutality is a really big one that students care about, too. We've had a lot of Black Lives Matter demonstrations lately. And so we want to present how libertarians, we are the group that opposes police brutality because police brutality is an outgrowth of state power.
Another one that's not so big as those are probably the Iran deal, the Syrian crisis, immigration, and also economic like policies.
So foreign policy is on the mind of students, economic issues, because you typically would think, oh yeah, the civil liberties issues and drug issues are always on top, but oh, millennials, they don't care about economic issues and foreign policy.
I feel like now it's starting to change. It's not more about social policies really dominating and having those two parties where you got to vote one way for certain social policies. It's a pretty like by it's just like two deals that we don't agree with. So we think the Libertarian Party is there, and being socially liberal and economically fiscal and conservative is I think it's definitely reaching kids.
Despite the stereotype of millennials, I think we are actually deeply caring about the economy because we came of age in a recession. We came of age in the worst recovery in recent U.S. history. So for us, growing up, the economy was weak. It was fragile. And so we're deeply worried about that.
Yeah, and I'm 33, so we graduated in 2006 and then, you know, had two good years. But it was tough to find a job. Then the 08 crash happens. I was 18 on 9/11, turned 18 2 days. I mean, so the upper end of the millennials have had to carry a lot of that burden. And I think for you guys, you don't want that to happen and you want to make sure that you have jobs when you graduate.
Yeah, that's definitely something we would like to ensure. But really,
perfect libertarians, unemployed and passionate about freedom.
Just go into legalization rallies. That's it.
Yeah, bro.
No, I think it's great. How many? It's taken about a year to get this up and running. Is that right? Dylan, Tyler?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, not exactly, because I started this party earlier this semester. Yeah, because I tried to join it, and it didn't exist. So I was like, well, better make one. And yeah, we've actually gotten it moving pretty a lot faster than I think some other campus groups have gotten up and running.
Yeah, that's incredibly impressive. I mean, it's more of the libertarian ethos is somebody should do that. That way I can go join it and to take the action and get it up and running so quickly is really a great job. So I want to commend you on that.
Now, I have a friend who is a sophomore in college and she's a Republican. And when people ask what her affiliation is, she says she's a libertarian and not a Republican. Do you guys see a lot of that where the Republican brand is so damaged within your peers that they won't say that they're Republican?
Well, yeah, the GOP is a train wreck. I mean, I think everybody can agree on that. It's not a grand old party anymore at all. So I think a lot of people are trying to distance themselves from that Republican stereotype. And the Libertarian Party, I think the Republican Party will look like the current Libertarian Party in 20 years anyway. So,
yeah, like, for example, when discussing very early in the year whether or not to endorse Trump, there's a huge debate within the GOP at IU. Like, I'm pretty sure it's a 50-50 split over whether or not to back the nominee. Half the campus Republicans have abandoned their nominee, and we're hoping to snatch them up.
Yeah, what do you said?
All right.
We just had a discussion this week about what it's going to actually look like when all the pieces settle and who will have control in the GOP post-Trump.
Yeah, so we're split because I'm a Libertarian Party guy. He's like, we gotta stick with the Republican Liberty Caucus.
Well, I just take whatever has an existing infrastructure to go and exploit.
Right, because ultimately a political party is just an empty wineskin. It is an empty vessel. It's what you make it. But where do you guys see the future in terms of the libertarian movement, how they'll fall into a political party?
That's what we're trying to do here, actually, because there's very little libertarian infrastructure in the Bloomington community, none on the IU campus, and so we're hoping to take advantage of this moment. A couple years ago, during the Ferguson protests about police brutality and how the rise of Rand Paul, they said that there was a libertarian movement, a moment in America. and there was a whole bunch of editorials saying the libertarian moment's over. No, if anything, the libertarian moment's been reborn, and now is the time to build that infrastructure.
Yeah, it's much bigger than it's ever been. And like I was saying earlier, I'm not sure if it'll just get absorbed sort of by the GOP, and the GOP will right itself and, you know, stop being idiots, or if the Libertarian Party will grow as something that's going to have to combat the GOP. I'm kind of hoping for the latter. I think it's a little more fun that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it would be wonderful if the GOP joined the Libertarian Party and we controlled the philosophical framework and everything like that, and they just voted. And they just donated and voted and did what they were told. That would be the ideal. Unfortunately, it's going to be a grind to get that broker that arrangement.
Yeah, I typically think, I mean, I don't want to come out and advocate a boomer genocide, but, no. So, but do you find that even your, I've found that under 40, it's very libertarian, regardless of party, even your Green Party friends and the Bernie bros. Have you had any success in reaching out to some of your fellow Bernie bros?
Yeah, I think some of the Bernie people actually like to come to the Libertarian camp instead of even like the Green Party, because people who liked Bernie were very anti-establishment, I think, and the Libertarian Party is all about anti-establishment, so I think there's a lot of common ground there, and I agree with you that if you're under 40 years old, you have a lot of libertarian values for the most part, and it's not hard to go talk to people, because there's not that much to disagree on at the end of the day. I mean, most people are libertarian, I really believe that.
Yeah, I have a ton of friends who are supporting Bernie in the primaries who, after what the DNC did to him, they're like, no, we cannot support this framework. And they looked at Gary Johnson like, I disagree with a lot of what he says, but at least he's consistently stands for freedom. He's not part of the corrupt Hillary establishment.
Yeah, even today, just now, we were talking with some Jill Stein supporters who were over at the booth and people who are handing out flyers. So we always find common ground when we're talking. It's obvious, it doesn't get heated. It doesn't get too political. It was the same thing when Bernie was big and he was rallying. Even libertarians were over there supporting him because he was anti-establishment. That's a really strong thing that connects Bernie and Jill Stein and Gary Johnson.
All right, very good. So shameless self-promotion time. You can promote your projects, your groups, yourselves, whatever you want to promote.
All right, well, if you're a student from the IU campus listening to this, join our group. We have a Facebook page. Anybody who wants to go like it, regardless of whether you go here, it's Libertarian Party at Indiana University.
And can you donate to that page as an alumni libertarian to help you guys out, your chapter?
We will make that available today.
And also follow us on Twitter at IU Libertarians.
All right, very good. Thanks, guys. You appreciate your time.
Style.
Yeah, he's the quiet type. All right, very good. Thank you so much. All right, we are here with an independent candidate for office. Tell us your name.
Drew Ash.
Drew Ash. So you are running as an independent candidate. You're not affiliated with any political party.
That is correct.
Would you say you lean one way ideologically?
You know, I consider myself to be a civil libertarian on certain issues. I also consider myself to be a progressive on some regulatory issues with regards to the environment and banking regulation. So I really don't fit a political mold, and that's why I'm running as a libertarian or as an independent.
So what does it take to run as an independent candidate?
It's tough because you don't have the same name recognition, nor do you have the same financial backing. So it's really a grassroots effort, because we don't have the same level of resources.
Or any.
Exactly. So it's been knocking on doors, a strong ground game, and it's really a grassroots effort.
So what is the ballot access process like for you as an independent candidate for state representative?
That's actually an interesting question, because it was confusing during the balloting process. When we were trying to get petition signatures, originally they told us we needed 123 signatures, then they told us 800, and then they told us 181.
Kept moving the goalpost on you.
Yep, they just kept moving the goalpost.
You're not Todd Young. You can't be taken care of like that.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't get that same special treatment. But we had by far enough signatures because we expected that we'd need much more than we did.
Ballot access is written out in law, so why were they, what was the reasoning for the moving goalpost?
Well, it's 2% of the amount of votes that the Secretary of State received in our district, and so when they were calculating the math, apparently they couldn't perform the math, but
I've generally found that county clerks are more confused about election law than candidates, parties, or the public.
What a waste of a public office. I mean, they don't even know the laws and the rules they're supposed to be in charge of administering.
Well, in fairness, they've been very helpful to me, and they've been very polite and easy to work with, so I do appreciate their help. But it's, yeah, just the math could have been a little bit more accurate.
So what are the top three issues that you're running on?
Campaign finance reform, marijuana legalization, and tax code reform.
In what way on tax code reform?
So tax code reform, one of the issues, I consider myself to be progressive in regards to taxation because I want to expand the consumer base and expand their purchasing power. So one misconception I think a lot of progressives have is they think a high corporate income tax is progressive, when really corporations are not people. So the true incidence of a corporate income tax isn't on corporations, it's on people, and it's essentially a flat tax. So I think we should lower the corporate income tax and use the inheritance tax, the estate tax.
Are you supporting a personal wealth tax like in Norway?
That would be something I would entertain. But any way that we can graduate the scale on it so it's tailored to people's overall income. And I don't think the corporate income tax does that well.
All right, so tell us, this is shameless self-promotion time. Tell us where people can get in touch with you and learn more about you.
You bet. So first off, our website, www.voteash2016.com. We have a Facebook page. Just go on Facebook and type in Vote Drew Ash for District 61. We have Instagram for the millennials, Twitter account. So you name it. But our website is the main hub to start.
VoteAsh2016.com.
Correct.
All right, very good. Thanks so much.
Thank you much, guys.
We are here with Joe Houtman, a great friend of mine, and also the chair of the Libertarian Party of Indiana, a longtime member. When did you get involved in the Libertarian Party?
Well, the Libertarian Party of Indiana in 1979, when I called the national headquarters and asked who was in charge of the Ed Clark petition drive in Indiana, and they said, funny you should ask.
That's great. So you have seen, can you talk about the political evolution of pot when it comes to libertarian candidates? Because as executive director in 2008, it was not something we advised candidates to talk about. How did that come about?
Well, actually, at the beginning of the party back in the 80s, it was not so much a forbidden topic. And then when there was a larger influx of people, shall we say, with a history of political action on the right, and they believe that that was where the recruitment should come from. They urged us to minimize the issue. And quite frankly, what we've been doing wasn't working, so we said, fine, we'll give it a try. But the LP has never gone away from its position of supporting legalization. It's been that way since the party was formed.
Not just legalization, but decriminalization, and some even go as far as pardoning all past offenses for pot.
Oh, absolutely. The idea that someone should be spending 20 years in jail for a joint, and especially if he can look out of his window and see people legally smoking it while he's still sitting in jail, just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It is in terms of common decency. You know, the fact that something is a law doesn't make it automatically right, and the fact that something is legal also doesn't make it automatically right.
So it became an uncomfortable issue until, when would you say it really kind of opened up and it became an issue that libertarians needed to talk about?
I hate to say libertarians, although a few have always been out front in the parade, basically waited until the crowd got bigger. We jumped back into the issue politically before the Democrats did, and the Republicans still are in la-la land on this issue. So I think what it really boils down to is, since we make arguments not only on freedom issues, but also on economics, when the economics became so obvious, it was the time that the right-wing libertarians were finally willing to jump back in, because it was talking money.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is it's become a position that is so unfiscally conservative. It is bigger than any welfare state you could possibly dream up to incarcerate the number of people we are for such harmless infractions.
And I think one of the things that really helped was Rupert's run because Rupert pointed out what a lot of people really weren't aware of, and that is how the criminal convictions basically guarantee you a seat in the lower class.
It perpetuates the cycle and increases it.
And what happens is, what Rupert has pointed out, is as working with the prison population, you get young guys who go into prison for pot, and then they come out professional criminals because they've got a record, they can't pay their bills, and so they've learned how to be better criminals while inside.
We give them a scholarship to a higher education management course in criminalization.
And even those who avoid that path. I have a former student who basically puts up cell towers. I have a fear of heights, and he actually likes them. But he says the majority of the people in his field that are actually the assemblers are felons, for the simple reason that it's one of the few good-paying jobs you can get with a felony conviction.
Now, you also have a Johnson Weld T-shirt. You are working with the Gary Johnson campaign here in Indiana. What is Gary Johnson's position on legalization, on the war on drugs?
He considers the war on drugs an absolute travesty. He is in total favor of legalization. But as he says, he is not running for king. He can only deal with what is given to him by the Congress. I suspect that he will do a lot of pardoning if he is president. That's within his power. But most people don't realize Gary's the different candidate this time. Everyone else is making promises they cannot keep, and they know they cannot keep, and anyone who stayed awake during civics class knows they cannot keep. Gary is the only one saying, I am running for president, not king. I will do what I can, but you better realize I can only do what the job allows.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit hurt that you don't think we're going to have a wall we didn't have to pay for, but I guess I'll get over that dream. But no, I mean, I Joe's one of my favorite libertarians. I actually saw him give a speech in 2013 in Columbus, Indiana, at the Clarion Hotel. That's a big reason why I became a libertarian, about how people are organic libertarians. And I think that is evident today. And you see that the commonality between everyone here and every group is that they don't want to force anything on anybody else, and they don't look down at you. You are free to do what you want, and that seems to be the recurring theme in America that's growing, which is a good sign. It just has to turn into electoral success.
Would you agree? I would agree. The success has been incredible, and the new blood is just awe-inspiring. It is a week out from the election, and we are still getting people contacting our office asking us to mail the materials so they can go door to door in favor of Gary Johnson in their neighborhoods. We've never had that kind of response. And as one who's been active in the party since the 80s, these are all people I've never heard of. These are people who are brought in purely by Gary Johnson and his centralist libertarian approach.
You're one of the most bullish people on the libertarian movement that I know.
You mean most optimistic? Yeah, I mean, what it boils down to, one of our problems, I think, is that we have been crying wolf for so long that when one actually showed up in the room, okay, even we didn't believe it. This election is unique, okay? Nobody ever thought we would sink to this terrible candidates. And the establishment trying to push these two candidates has shown the bias and manipulation to a degree we've never seen before. I mean, I think it's a great success. We've actually had a sitting president telling people not to vote for a libertarian. Okay, that to me is real success.
Absolutely. They know how to pronounce it. Unbelievable. It's happening.
All right, Joe Houtman, shameless self-promotion time. Plug whatever you'd like to plug or where people can get in touch with you.
All I'm going to plug right now between now and the election is get out and vote and be proud of your vote. If you really, really think we need the wall, go vote for it. If you really think it is her time, go vote for her. But whatever you do, be proud when you walk out of that voting booth. I'm going to be proud, okay? Even if my candidate does not win, I am not going to be an accomplice to what will happen if he loses.
All right, thanks, Joe. We're here talking to a student reporter. What's your name?
Cashew Rohali. All right.
And
Cashew?
Cashew. Not Cashew. No, it's Cashew, like the you know, the bar with the nuts. No, anyway.
Common mistake.
So you were here covering the legalization rally. And did you come in with any, as a reporter, we'll call you a reporter, did you come in with kind of any preconceived notions about what this might be?
You know, found out about the rally because I saw a sign over in the Memorial Union, and I was interested, and so I looked up the Higher Fellowship, who's sponsoring this rally in the 92 County Rally Tour, and I was like, this is really interesting to look at, especially as a college student. I think that marijuana is something that is brought up in conversation, okay, socially.
Brought up, smoked, you know. That's
up, you know, rolled up, maybe, lit up. Yeah, that's my euphemism, is brought up, quote unquote. But I wanted to kind of look into it, and I talked to David, one of the co-founders of the organization, and so that's kind of how I got my information. So Preconceived Notions, I did a little bit of research before I came here, but I'm really impressed with all the other people that came out, all the organizations tabling out here. I thought it was kind of cool to show the local support and how, you know, there's a political aspect, there's Scaly Tails, you know, the people who have all the awesome creatures over there.
Somebody brought a turtle. There's a turtle and an iguana here.
Yeah, crazy. But also David introduced me to some patients, and I got to talk to them for my project, and I think that was a really important part for me because, yeah, personally, I've seen it being used recreationally, so I kind of wanted to do this project to get a look from a medicinal standpoint. So that was very great to look at that. So that really changed my perception on everything and made a bigger picture for me.
Give us some details on that.
So I talked to two people. One of the women just spoke. She's a mother, and she has fibromyalgia as well as some chronic pain, and her daughter has the fibromyalgia as well. And she was telling me how after Pence passed his law and those bills with the war on drugs and everything, the pharmacist and her doctor kind of just shut down her use of prescription drugs. And so she was finding cannabis as one of her resources. And she says, I give marijuana to my kid because I don't want her to go through pain. And I think that that was an interesting standpoint, because as a mother, you never want your kid to go through anything. So I assume, I'm not a mom, but I know my mom would probably do the same for me. But on that contrasting point, this guy coming up here is about to speak. I know you can't see it, but right over there, there was another guy that I spoke to that when he was 13, he's had chronic migraines since he was a kid, and he smoked for the first time and found some relief, and his parents found out, and they called law enforcement on him. Oh, wow. So they were looking out for him in their own way, I guess, but it was kind of cool to see the contrasting stories of a parent protecting their child, or so they thought, by providing them with weed, and parents who were, quote unquote, protecting their child by stripping it away from them and not condoning that behavior. Right. So it was an interesting contrast, and yeah, I thought that was cool.
So what are some other things that you discovered while you were here?
I guess I would say that I discovered that there is a lot more to this story than I'm used to seeing on my college campus. I think that, yeah, sure, recreational use, that's great, and for those who want to do it, sure, you know, as long as you don't let it ruin your life, anything can ruin your life. You know, too much pizza. Pizza could be a gateway to obesity.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, college is a gateway drug to everything wrong.
Safe spaces.
Yeah.
What is it like culturally now, being a college student? Do you walk on eggshells trying not to offend people? And what's your major, and what's the nature of this project?
And how old are you?
I'm 22 years old. I just turned 22. I am a journalism major here at Indiana. And you know what? Trigger warnings and everything these days, it's so hard because you want to be politically correct. And as a journalism student, I definitely want to be ethically correct in everything I do. So this project, I will look at the other side of, you know, people who are against legalization of marijuana, just to kind of, you know, get the other side of the story. Again, I don't want to be biased.
So she'll go to a nursing home.
Yeah.
Or a GOP fundraiser.
Yeah, well, actually, what I'm learning today is that if I went to a nursing home, I probably would have more trouble finding that, which is interesting. That's another thing I discovered. But yeah, I mean, it's hard. And I think I was raised in more of like a kind of liberal household, and I'm not from Indiana, but I'm from the west suburbs of Chicago. Okay. So I think that, yeah, you don't want to walk on eggshells, but also you read the statistics, you see the facts about this in particular, and I just think that if you're not opening your eyes to statistics and research, then I'm not saying you're naive, I'm just saying that you're not opening your eyes. Yeah, like, open your eyes, people, it's okay.
Right. So how prevalent is that? Because, like, to me, I was actually talking to a former IU student, and she graduated a couple years ago. And I said, listen, the safe space stuff, that can't be, like, that has to be the exception and not the rule. Am I wrong? Or, like, is it really, like, everybody wants to be, nobody wants to be purposefully offensive, except for maybe Greg. But everybody wants to be nice to other people, especially here in Indiana where people are nice. But at the same time, like, I just don't imagine that there's, like, this full-scale operation of safe spaces and all that kind of stuff is zoned off with orange cones and kind of blown out of proportion by these conservative media sites. Am I wrong? I mean, you live on campus, I assume, and so you tell us what the environment is like for college students these days.
Just in terms of safe spaces or?
Culturally the environment and, like, how persuaded you feel.
It's hard not to offend anybody ever. You know, you can say anything. Well, exactly, right. But I think that what I really appreciate about this campus is that there are so many voices from so many different people. And maybe this is just me, but I personally think that this is a safe place to express what you're feeling and what you support, whether it is, you know, you're pro-cannabis or you are a LGBTQ activist, whatever it is that...
Pro-Trump,
we have that, you know, like it's
really,
yeah. Trump? Well, there's not like a Trump footprint, but I know people that are pro-Trump. We had a Bernie Sanders club for quite some time, and he came to campus and spoke earlier when his campaign was still alive. But you know, I guess I'm struggling with an answer because I feel very safe on campus, but I know that, you know, I'm a white female. And I think that there are a lot of people that do struggle with getting their message across to people, but I do think that Indiana does allow their students to say what they're saying, embrace their First Amendment rights, and really just kind of get their voice out there if they believe in something, which I really respect about this university.
So what are your future plans? What do you plan to do?
Oh, who's to say? Good question. I'm graduating this May. And I would hope to be doing something in the communications field, anything with, you know, the media. Like I said, I'm studying journalism, so writing or really just anything that gets me involved with. Yeah, start a Tumblr, you know. Become Instagram famous, do nothing, and get paid for it.
Become a dank memester. It's worked for us. Any final thoughts? Any questions?
No, it's good to hear that it is a place where there is extreme diversity and it's tolerated. Now, I don't think anyone would... You wouldn't have 500 people for a pro-Hitler rally, and you probably wouldn't have picked that as your project. But it is still the tide hasn't stemmed where people are afraid.
Absolutely. That is 100% in my experience true. Of course, I'm one person out of a campus of 40,000. But, yeah, from what I've experienced, there's just every day there's an opportunity to make your voice heard or to go and hear somebody else's opinions and beliefs. And the diversity on this campus is really incredible. And I do respect it and I appreciate it. And I love that I can come to Dunn Meadow on a Saturday and see a pro-legalization rally. And then I can go down the street to Kilroy's and just see people dancing and singing and having a good time, you know?
Yeah, college is great. Stay here.
I'm trying to with all my might.
All right, thanks so much. This is shameless self-promotion time. So anything that you'd like to shamelessly self-promote, if people, you've got a blog or whatever, I mean, or a resume where people can get a resume from you.
Oh my gosh. Crap. I have a public Instagram and Twitter. I think I'm kind of clever sometimes on Twitter. Follow Cashew Rohali. No, I don't want to promote
relax,
anything.
I keep hearing Cashew.
Cashew. Cashiey Rohaly.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you guys. Have a good day. Thanks.
Cool. We're here with a couple of potheads. No, yeah. Just kidding. tell us your names.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Nick.
All right. Brandon and Nick, you guys are with what group?
I'm with Against Prohibition.
They invited us.
I'm also with Against Prohibition, first year officer.
All right. So what led you to get involved in the group?
Well, I think the drug war is unethical on multiple grounds. I mean, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And we've been going at the drug war for, I think, 45 years or something like that. And what do we have? Drugs, still more violence, largest prison population in the world. When there's plenty of evidence, even just plain economics, that shows that the drug war is a Sisyphean task. And so I joined this because I think that we need reform.
Excellent usage of Sisyphean task.
He must be a philosophy major. Oh. What's your major?
Public policy analysis.
So he's a hardcore nerd like us.
Yeah, yeah.
So what led you to get involved with legalization?
Well, I'm actually a long-term libertarian. So, yeah, there we go, representing a little bit.
Yep.
I see you over there, Rupert. I would have voted for you if I'm from Indiana. Just as a libertarian, on principle, the war on drugs is morally wrong. It doesn't work, clearly. Just because you say, hey, don't do that, it doesn't mean that people aren't going to do it.
They usually do more of it.
They'll actually probably do more of it, you're right. So that was kind of my rationality behind it. I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do anything, I'm boring, but just on principle it needs to be ended.
Found our people.
So we often joke that it's a Joe Hauptmann joke, but we often fight for lives far more interesting than our own.
Well, I wouldn't like to say that I'm boring. I'm still fun, but, you know.
You look like a fun guy. Oh, that's not a mushroom joke. I knew he'd love it. Public policy guy. So what reception? I imagine you guys get great reception on a college campus.
Oh, yeah. I mean, pretty much everyone here smokes. I mean, we're millennials. Was it like 60 to 70% of us have smoked pot at least?
Actually, according to that, first year IU interview you had to do, only 2% of us vote or 2% of us smoke. So,
I'm going to call BS on that one. I'm going to call straight BS.
Millennials are mostly liars when it comes to authority. We just tell you.
Yeah. I have to agree.
The state, man.
Pretty much. I'll tell you exactly what you want to hear and do whatever I want.
So now, what other kind of events do you guys do?
So I know in the future we're going to have an overdose reaction training, so that way people understand, you know, what should happen in case you see someone who's overdosing on something, whether it be crack or heroin or whatever. And I don't think a lot of people like know what exactly to do. I honestly don't know what to do, and so I'm really excited for the event because, I mean, even if it saves one person, it's worth putting that event.
All right, well, thanks so much for joining us. Shameless self-promotion. How can people find out about your group?
We actually just launched our website. It's againstprohibition.org. That's, of course, one word, no caps.
Great video, by the way.
Thank you very much. I'm actually in it. There's my shameless promotion. Yeah, go against prohibition. We're at IU Bloomington's campus. It should be pretty easy to find us.
And we also have a Facebook and Twitter, so you can go on there and find us, too. I know that our social media page is very active. I think we just passed 420 on our Facebook page. So
right now.
Yeah, just right there. Right there.
Cool. Also, if you guys want to follow us on Snapchat, we just launched it today as well. It's No Prohibition. Of course, again, one word, and we should come up as Against Prohibition.
All right, and thanks so much for inviting us.
Thank you very much.
You have a nice day.
Have a nice day, guys.
Okay, up next we have Greg and Chris from We Are Libertarians. They're going to be speaking for a little bit. Heard them a bunch of times, so, you know, just get ready. It'll be over soon. We've still got some shirts for sale, a lot of shirts. So if you're interested, go over there. But for now, give it up for Greg and Chris.
Come on, you can do better than that. There you go. I like your attitude. Hello, fellow teens. I am Chris Spangle. I am the host of We Are Libertarians. This is Greg Lenz. We are libertarian podcasters. That's right, ladies. Control yourselves. Like you said, it'll be over soon. I am actually the former executive director of the Libertarian Party of Indiana. I was there from 2008 to 2012, and it is... If you had told me in 2005 that I would be speaking at a legalization rally, I wouldn't have believed you.
No, it's been amazing. To watch the difference between 2008 to 2016 is nothing short of remarkable. The culture's changed. The tide's changed. This is the moment. And just everybody coming out today, when I know IU football, I don't know if they won or not, but this kind of turnout to support this movement is incredible.
The electorate really has shifted in a major way from 2008 to now. In 2008, for libertarian candidates, it was a death blow to talk about legalization or the war on drugs because it had for so long been used against libertarians and progressives and anybody who cared about freedom as a way to... It was voter suppression. It was a way to disenfranchise libertarian candidates by saying that all they cared about was drugs. Now society has completely changed, and a lot of it has to do with millennials. And also...
Barack Obama's attitude, and you see him pardoning so many people now, and it's a huge amount of progress in a short amount of time.
Yeah, it's a testament to the changing tide and the millennial generation. I mean, quite frankly, we get crapped upon by everybody. You know, we're the lazy boomerang kids that move in back with their parents, and then they can't pay their student loans, and it looks like they're not ambitious. But no, but this movement single-handedly has changed the tide in America to the point where Gallup says 52% of Americans support decriminalization and legalization. And, you know, I don't know what the – I don't know when we're going to start showing up in the polls, but I would encourage everyone out here today to show up on Election Day. Stop trusting people who are opportunists with this movement and start holding them accountable and voting for candidates who have always been on the right side of legalization.
So when Hillary Clinton says that she's going to declassify, deschedule marijuana from 1 down to 2, which is still not good enough, we need to hold her to that if she's elected president. If Donald Trump is elected president, then I guess... does anybody know what Donald Trump believes at all? About, I don't know, but obviously Gary Johnson and Jill Stein both are for freedom in this area, and that's what it comes down to, is freedom. And so many of us understand that this is an issue of freedom. It isn't just that we want to get high. In fact, I've never smoked marijuana in my life. I've never even drank alcohol. But just because you, some of you over there, want to smoke weed, I have no problem with that, because it's an issue of liberty and freedom. But there are people in this society that don't necessarily think that way. And so we not only have to message this issue on freedom, but we also have to talk about the economic realities of locking up 20 to 25% of our population over a plant. It's ridiculous.
It is, and it's at the point where we are a movement that now has to tailor our message to the audience. There is no such thing as a fiscal conservative that supports prohibition. If you agree to that, you are saying that it is worth $21,000 a year to incarcerate somebody who's using a plant that at one point in the Jamestown colony, it was a law you had to grow it. That is just absurd, and it is. If you have to build coalitions, and that's what's so great about today, is to see all the different competing organizations and that they are able to mold into this wonderful unit that is accomplishing political change. So give yourselves a round of applause, because you're all kicking ass and doing a great job.
So moving forward, we not only need to talk about freedom, but we also need to talk about ending the drug war as an economic issue, a civil liberties issue. And it's just morally wrong to destroy entire communities over a plant.
Yeah, the prohibition has been a cancer on American society. It's destroyed communities, it's destroyed families, it's destroyed futures. It has robbed the United States Treasury of tax dollars because they're not able to enter back into the economy after being felons. There just isn't one part of society that's benefited from the prohibition of drugs.
Right. Have any of you seen The House I Live In? It's a documentary. It was on Netflix, but it's a must-see documentary. And it talks about the economic realities of society. Once NAFTA and free trade agreements were signed into law, the bottom 15% of our population no longer had an economic situation, and drugs moved in for those people. And so the politicians found a way to warehouse people. And instead of – it's a moral issue. We warehouse the bottom 15%, the poor in our society, the bottom economic class – and then make money off of them through private prisons.
Unpaid labor.
Right. And the documentary 13 that the previous speaker talked about also highlights this. And if you care about the poor, then you must care about the ending of the drug war. And these are the ways that we need to message moving forward so that we build further coalitions. It's not just about liberty. It's also about morality, ethics, and financial sense.
It is. It's about the sustainability of the United States as a republic. We are simply at the state where we can no longer continue on and kicking the can down the road. When we do, when we finally take action and show up on Election Day, that's when the course of United States history will change, and it will be because you came out to support this movement.
All right. So thank you so much for letting us speak. We are Libertarians at WeAreLibertarians.com. Get the podcast. Our microphones, they work. Yes, unfortunately for some people. So check us out, wearelibertarians.com. And thank you to Brandon and all of the students at IU who put this on and did all the hard work for this. Give them a round of applause, and thank you very much.
And thanks for letting us as nerdy libertarians be with the cool kids for one time in college. This was quite enjoyable.
Yeah, enjoy it while it lasts.
If everyone please give a big hand for Rupert.
Thank you, sir. You know, I was hoping for hundreds of people out here. There should be. I don't want to get too far away from this podium. I love this podium. It shows the struggle that we've got. It really does. I love that. You know, yeah, we've been in this state for many, many years. One of the players in the hemp, that's right, legalize, in the hemp wars, in the pot wars, in the drug wars. We have prisons filled with young men and women that are the victims of our wars. In Indiana, we spend, $16 billion a year on our budget. About $1 billion of that goes to the detention centers in Indiana. $1 billion. They've already admitted that over 40% of the people locked up in Indiana are in there for pot crimes. 40%. 40% of $1 billion, $400 million of our money going to lock us up. Now, I don't have a problem, well, a little bit, with paying my taxes, but I have a problem when they use my money to lock my friends, my family, myself up. That's not what's supposed to happen. Our government is supposed to protect us. I don't think a plant is hurting anyone. I've heard a few people stand up here and say, I don't think I've heard of any time a marijuana plant killed anyone. There might have been. But I know so many more ways than a plant to hurt yourself. In our system, do we really believe that we're keeping ourselves safer by putting so many people in prison, by spending our dollars? I've been working for 25 plus years trying to show how if we take those same dollars and empower ourselves, let's go for at least the decriminalization. Why are we putting ourselves in prison? It's you guys that are going to be able to change the law. Our politicians will, sooner or later, listen to us if we stand up and yell loud enough. It is not their place to protect us from ourselves, my gosh. The government cannot protect us from everything. We don't want them to. I thought we lived in a free society. If we live in a free society and I want to pick a plant that's growing there and put it in my mouth and eat it, I should be able to. It's just a plant. You saw me stand up in the debates against Mike Pence and John Gregg saying it's just a plant. In the United States, we spend hundreds of billions of dollars bringing hemp products into the United States. Can't produce any in the United States. You look at the history of Indiana. You look at the ditches along the country roads. You'll see ditchweed, rope dope, hemp growing wild. The cops know where it is. They watch the kids that pick it and then throw them in jail. I think they should let them smoke it and cop the headache and realize it's not smoking pot. In Indiana, when we were on the big land grab, one of the four crops that you signed up to grow, corn, soybeans, wheat, hemp, Our Constitution is written on hemp paper. We used to clothe our military in hemp clothing. We used to run our diesel engines on hemp ethanol. We start looking at the release of information coming out of World War II. Hemp is a great ethanol. 100 gallons per acre per harvest. Corn gives you 5 gallons, and it takes more energy to produce it than it does to give back. And we're burning our food supply. Indiana has a growing crop that would support 3 harvests a year. We've heard a little bit from Indiana farmers already today. What farmer wouldn't want 3 harvests a year? I don't want, and I've already seen the start of it, and you guys keep an eye. They're already starting to talk about bringing hemp in, but they're talking about selling it at $1 a seed through the government. I'm sorry, but a bale of seeds shouldn't cost more than a few bucks. They're just seeds. On one plant, you get thousands if you don't pay attention. Being able to go back and look what we've done as a society. We've given ourselves hemp. We've given ourselves pot. We've got the letters from George Washington talking about his crop. And he's not talking about anything else but what he's smoking. We've had governors, mayors, presidents that have admitted to having shoeboxes full of pot in their dorm room. We've got a sitting president right now that smoking pot was one of the lesser that he did. He's our president. Bush already admitted to being a coke freak. Pot. If we want to change society, we have to start showing all of us the dollars spent, misspent, hundreds of millions of dollars just in this state, and it's our money locking us up, locking our children up. If we want to stop that, we have that ability, but we have to vote. We have to register. We have to bond together. We have to be willing to stand up and say, I'm for legalization. I'm for decriminalization. I'm for changing society. I don't want to see the prisons growing. The number 5 generator in our gross domestic product across the country is the detention center. Trillions of dollars are changed hands. It's our tax dollars. Trillions of dollars to lock us up. We heard somebody talking about the privatization of our prisons. When we privatize the services of our prisons, when we guarantee, we had in our campaign a contract from Pendleton guaranteeing a 95% capacity in our prisons for the next 10 years. How can we do that if we don't know what's going to happen? Well, yes, we do. We're going to be putting people in jail. That's got to change. It's our lives. It's our world. It's our country. It's just a plant. I hope the neighborhood hears. It's just a plant. If we want to actually change society, we will embrace that plant. Like I say, hundreds of billions, a few $100 billion in income for hemp products. We're standing right here in a land that is full of limestone, Indiana limestone. You start grinding Indiana limestone, mixing it with hemp, the hemp fibers, putting it in a bag with a few other chemicals, and selling hempcrete. You would be worldwide in the factories. Every factory in this community would be up and running. Every worker that wanted to work would have a job. We wouldn't have to be holding our hands out. We'd be taking care of ourselves, and we can do it with a plant.
It's just a plant. In World War II, if we wouldn't have let cotton, oil, and timber control our government, we would have hemp right now. In World War II, it helped us win the war. Every diesel engine was switched over to hemp diesel. Every soldier was clothed in hemp clothing. Every document written on hemp paper. At the end of the war, the government squashed that. It would have put cotton, oil, and timber out of business. And what happens when you have a government that's tied to oil, that relies on the backing of cotton, oil, and timber to create their own agendas? Not ours, not to help us, to put money in elite pockets. If we want to change this world, we will embrace hemp. We will embrace pot. We will embrace marijuana. It will not be a bad term. It'll be a good term. The medical, the financial, the economic, the lives saved by the plant would be outrageous. Immense. I want to say I'm willing to stand up and show the world we need to change. Unfortunately, there's not 1,000 people out here, but everyone out here, go home and talk about what we're talking about here. Go home and spread that online. Go home and do that research. Any of the facts that you've heard me say, I can't believe them myself. We do the due diligence, the fact checking. Every fact that I have spoken is less than what is really true. It is 43-44% in our system. Hundreds of millions of dollars we spend locking our people up. I want to change it. We need everyone to change it. It's going to be not only the millennials, but even the boomers that stand up and say, enough is enough. The drug war is disgusting, and it doesn't work. Putting our people in prison for smoking a plant is insane, and it's going to bankrupt us. We save the prison for the violent offender, and we keep the cool little pot smokers working. I want to thank you guys very, very much for including me. Yes, I was on Survivor, and we had a whole lot of stories out there. I found no pot, but it's amazing how a banana leaf smokes. You guys have a wonderful night. Rupert'sKids.org is how you get a hold of me. Email me. Thank you.
If everyone please give a big hand for Rupert.
Thank you, sir. You know, I was hoping for hundreds of people out here. There should be. I don't want to get too far away from this podium. I love this podium. It shows the struggle that we've got. It really does. I love that. You know, yeah, we've been in this state for many, many years. One of the players in the hemp, that's right, legalize, in the hemp wars, in the pot wars, in the drug wars. We have prisons filled with young men and women that are the victims of our wars. In Indiana, we spend $16 billion a year on our budget. About $1 billion of that goes to the detention centers in Indiana. $1 billion. They've already admitted that over 40% of the people locked up in Indiana are in there for pot crimes. 40%. 40% of $1 billion, $400 million of our money going to lock us up. Now, I don't have a problem, well, a little bit, with paying my taxes, but I have a problem when they use my money to lock my friends, my family, myself up. That's not what's supposed to happen. Our government is supposed to protect us. I don't think a plant is hurting anyone. I've heard a few people stand up here and say, I don't think I've heard of any time a marijuana plant killed anyone.
There might have been. But I know so many more ways than a plant to hurt yourself. In our system, do we really believe that we're keeping ourselves safer by putting so many people in prison, by spending our dollars? I've been working for 25 plus years trying to show how if we take those same dollars and empower ourselves, let's go for at least the decriminalization. Why are we putting ourselves in prison? It's you guys that are going to be able to change the law. Our politicians will, sooner or later, listen to us if we stand up and yell loud enough. It is not their place to protect us from ourselves. My gosh, the government cannot protect us from everything. We don't want them to. I thought we lived in a free society. If we live in a free society and I want to pick a plant that's growing there and put it in my mouth and eat it, I should be able to. It's just a plant. You saw me stand up in the debates against Mike Pence and John Gregg saying it's just a plant. In the United States, we spend hundreds of billions of dollars bringing hemp products into the United States. Can't produce any in the United States. You look at the history of Indiana. You look at the ditches along the country roads. You'll see ditchweed, rope dope, hemp growing wild. The cops know where it is. They watch the kids that pick it and then throw them in jail. I think they should let them smoke it and cop the headache and realize it's not smoking pot. In Indiana, when we were on the big land grab, one of the four crops that you signed up to grow, corn, soybeans, wheat, hemp. Our Constitution is written on hemp paper. We used to clothe our military in hemp clothing. We used to run our diesel engines on hemp ethanol. We start looking at the release of information coming out of World War II. Hemp is a great ethanol. 100 gallons per acre per harvest. Corn gives you 5 gallons, and it takes more energy to produce it than it does to give back. And we're burning our food supply. Indiana has a growing crop that would support 3 harvests a year. We've heard a little bit from Indiana farmers already today. What farmer wouldn't want 3 harvests a year? I don't want, and I've already seen the start of it, and you guys keep an eye. They're already starting to talk about bringing hemp in, but they're talking about selling it at $1 a seed through the government. I'm sorry, but a bale of seeds shouldn't cost more than a few bucks. They're just seeds. On one plant, you get thousands if you don't pay attention. Being able to go back and look what we've done as a society. We've given ourselves hemp. We've given ourselves pot. We've got the letters from George Washington talking about his crop. And he's not talking about anything else but what he's smoking. We've had governors, mayors, presidents that have admitted to having shoeboxes full of pot in their dorm room. We've got a sitting president right now that smoking pot was one of the lesser that he did. He's our president. Bush already admitted to being a coke freak. Pot.
If we want to change society, we have to start showing all of us the dollars spent, misspent, hundreds of millions of dollars just in this state, and it's our money locking us up, locking our children up. If we want to stop that, we have that ability, but we have to vote. We have to register. We have to bond together. We have to be willing to stand up and say, I'm for legalization. I'm for decriminalization. I'm for changing society. I don't want to see the prisons growing. The number five generator in our gross domestic product across the country is the detention center. Trillions of dollars are changed hands. It's our tax dollars. Trillions of dollars to lock us up. We heard somebody talking about the privatization of our prisons. When we privatize the services of our prisons, when we guarantee, we had in our campaign a contract from Pendleton guaranteeing a 95% capacity in our prisons for the next 10 years. How can we do that if we don't know what's going to happen? Well, yes, we do. We're going to be putting people in jail. That's got to change. It's our lives. It's our world. It's our country. It's just a plant. I hope the neighborhood hears. It's just a plant. If we want to actually change society, we will embrace that plant. Like I say, hundreds of billions, a few hundred billion dollars in income for hemp products. We're standing right here in a land that is full of limestone, Indiana limestone. You start grinding Indiana limestone, mixing it with hemp, the hemp fibers, putting it in a bag with a few other chemicals, and selling hempcrete. You would be worldwide in the factories. Every factory in this community would be up and running. Every worker that wanted to work would have a job. We wouldn't have to be holding our hands out. We'd be taking care of ourselves, and we can do it with a plant. It's just a plant. In World War II, if we wouldn't have let cotton, oil, and timber control our government, we would have hemp right now. In World War II, it helped us win the war. Every diesel engine was switched over to hemp diesel. Every soldier was clothed in hemp clothing. Every document written on hemp paper. At the end of the war, the government squashed that. It would have put cotton, oil, and timber out of business. And what happens when you have a government that's tied to oil, that relies on the backing of cotton, oil, and timber to create their own agendas? Not ours, not to help us, to put money in elite pockets. If we want to change this world, we will embrace hemp. We will embrace pot. We will embrace marijuana. It will not be a bad term. It'll be a good term. The medical, the financial, the economic, the lives saved by the plant would be outrageous. Immense. I want to say I'm willing to stand up and show the world we need to change. Unfortunately, there's not 1,000 people out here, but everyone out here, go home and talk about what we're talking about here. Go home and spread that online. Go home and do that research. Any of the facts that you've heard me say, I can't believe them myself. We do the due diligence, the fact checking. Every fact that I have spoken is less than what is really true. It is 43-44% in our system. Hundreds of millions of dollars we spend locking our people up. I want to change it. We need everyone to change it. It's going to be not only the millennials, but even the boomers that stand up and say, enough is enough. The drug war is disgusting, and it doesn't work. Putting our people in prison for smoking a plant is insane, and it's going to bankrupt us. We save the prison for the violent offender, and we keep the cool little pot smokers working. I want to thank you guys very, very much for including me. Yes, I was on Survivor, and we had a whole lot of stories out there. I found no pot, but it's amazing how a banana leaf smokes. You guys have a wonderful night. Rupert'sKids.org is how you get a hold of me. Email me. Thank you.
So there you have it. Thanks to Brandon and Lauren and everybody at Against Prohibition at IU. Thank you to the Young Americans for Liberty and all the other co-sponsors, Higher Ground, for inviting us out to the event to do a live podcast there and to speak. And hopefully you found it informative. Thank you very much. If you want to follow Against Prohibition on Twitter, the people that put the event on, then please go to IU No Prohibition, @IU No Prohibition. Thank you very much, and thank you for listening.